Friday, on the walk into the office, a dear friend caught up and came alongside to walk along with me, as friends do. Coming alongside, that is, walking with us, that is. The luxurious, languid autumn of New England this year allows more outdoor conversation. The river to the right, the buildings older and newer to the left, with students and faculty kicking up some leaves along the way. We had not seen each other to talk since COVID. And we talked about exercise and failing knees and about what we had done or not done in the pandemic. Outdoors, no distance, no mask, no immediate existential worry, no COVID decisions to make. Just two friends, a while apart and now again together again. What a simple joy, an authentic moment in the midst of various forms of service. He, like many at this good university, has given simple, authentic service, servant leadership over many years. He then told me that in COVID, he would come alone to the chapel now and then. Now, you have heard me say already and many times that the very best thing we do at Marsh Chapel is nothing. We do nothing. We unlock and open the doors and let people come in, bask in the beauty of the nave, sit, relax, snooze, meditate, pray. Yes, he said. I know, he said. One day, he continued, I was getting up to leave and decided I would take a video on my phone of nothing. A video of the empty church, a video of the quiet nave, a video of stone and glass and wood and all. Then he said, I timed it to exactly 1 minute so that every day when I wanted to, though I was miles away from Boston University and Marsh Chapel, I could return to the simple, the authentic, the quiet. Thank you, he said. It was nothing, I responded. Truly nothing, I replied. It was nothing. And that is the best thing we do, nothing. Carrying some quiet then from COVID, we meet Jesus this morning on the hinges of the earliest gospel as the flow of the gospel continues to swing from Lord to apostles. In the announcement of this good news is included a measure of empowerment for each one of us. This is the kind of beautiful autumn day on which, for once, or for the first time, or for once in a long time, we may be seized by a sense of divine nearness. The kingdom of heaven is at hand. The kingdom of heaven is near to you. What a sentence, and what a home that sentence makes in a heart, or in the heart of a community. A different kind of life ensues when that promise settles in. Now, faith may come like a blinding light on the road to Damascus. It may. But most of the time, it rather comes one stumble, one step, one stop at a time. One step on the walk of faith, wherein it helps to have a friend alongside as a person of faith. Take a step a day, a step a week. Health, salvation, healing, solace, wellness, well-being come in small doses, occasional, discreet, bit by bit. Some, like Paul, are blinded by a moment on the road to Damascus, but most of us are seized in faith, brought to healing in a very gradual way over time, as our blessed teacher of blessed memory, Father Raymond Brown, was used to say. Not lightning, but enlightening. Enlightened bit by bit, day by day. Sermon by sermon, we could say. One step at a time. This week, can you take a step in faith? The step this week may just be toward simple, authentic service akin to that of the Lord Christ announced here this day, servant leader. One step in faith comes in service. The considered use of influence, of leadership in service. The gospel today tells us that authentic authority, real responsibility, are a matter very much deeply a matter of the heart. What are your models for this? Do they include Mark chapter 10? Do they include at least a little simplicity, a little steady service? Can we take one step this week, a step in faith in some manner of service? It is intriguing that the gospel lessons about living in Mark are set in the humble reaches of the lake country of Galilee. Writing in Rome in trouble in 70 AD, there must have been some comfort, some folkloric encouragement for the persecuted urban Christians of Rome in these polished memories of Jesus' teaching along the shores of Galilee. There is beauty along the lake. There is serenity along the lake. Along the lake, there is space and time to sift, reminisce, remember, sort. The still waters still restore there the soul to stillness. Yet, though our lesson is ostensibly set in the country, up in the North Country Lake region, make no mistake, these few verses are crafted in urban Christianity. Our gospel lesson today is a place where the earliness, the priority of Mark is clear. Mark is the earliest of our gospels. The others follow. Notice how his successors cringe at his composition. Most tellingly, Matthew removes the selfish request from the lips of the disciples and has their mother ask Jesus. But then Matthew still has Jesus respond to the disciples. Luke simply erases the passage and so spares the 12. They knew too the embarrassment, as do we, of some ranges of inherited scripture. As we do when troubling passages arise, think of what is your most sensitive, your sense of the most sensitive and offensive of these, and they are multiple. The Gospel of John and the phrase, the Jews, the Psalms and the revenge in every fifth one of them, the book of Genesis, rape and violence, the full story of David, not a children's story. The household codes in Colossians and the New Testament assumption of slavery and patriarchy. It is a long list. And these readings come around and we mutter, is this really necessary? In that spirit, Luke simply erased Mark 10, today's passage, 15 years later. But Mark is determined here to show that the disciples, as do many in Mark's own church, they miss the point, maybe intentionally so. And the point? There is no real greatness, there is no real leadership, there is no service worthy of the name without humility, none without some anxiety, some hurt, none without pain, none without public rebuke, none without the patience of Job, who today hears the crushing voice of the Lord out of the whirlwind. None without a caring heart for those who experience the consequences of decisions which others make. If in your life and in your work you have seen humility, known hurt, felt pain, had rebuke, summoned patience, found empathy, for all the cost, take heart. You have taken a step, one step, a step in faith. Good. Good for you. Here also in Mark 10, we have a strange reference to, and the word is glory. The intonation of glory is a clue that we are reading from years, decades after Golgotha. The stark reference to the cup of sorrow here bears a memory of Golgotha. The knowing and the counter-knowing of the question about baptism and its portents reveals the hurt of Golgotha. The shadow of grief that darkens this discourse is the shadow of the very cross of Christ. And the final phrase is unmistakable in its reference: to give his life as a ransom for many. And this cost, the cost of discipleship, is ever a steep hill to climb, is ever a hard lesson to teach, is ever a hard lesson to learn. The basic inability of the disciples to grasp or accept Jesus' concept of messiahship, or its corollary, suffering discipleship, becomes reflected more and more in their total relationship to Jesus as the gospel progresses. The conflict here and later over the interpretation of messiahship widens into a general conflict and misunderstanding in almost every area of their relationship. Yet, there is a true kind of encouragement here for us as we take one step in faith. Our gospel records the misunderstandings of the disciples and their reluctance quickly or easily to comprehend in full the nature of faith. It takes them time. That should reassure us. It takes us time. It takes one step at a time. But that one step can bring an opening to faith. You may come to a morning hour, even this one, in which you sense a new opening, a desire to live a life that makes you smile, to live a life that makes others smile, to live a life that makes God smile. And step by step, it may be, we may become, you and I, kinder, happier, more generous, more forgiving. And isn't that the purpose of being alive? To speak and to act and to be in a way that brings a smile to the divine countenance as well as the human. In your own life of service, of work, this coming week, in your own life of leadership this week, there may emerge, there may be wrought a fuller, a more authentic, a simpler way. A step toward servant leadership is such a step, one step in faith. Think for a moment of the Shaker community. in their work, their dress, their furniture, their devotion, their relations. The Shakers lived simply. The heart of their simplicity and ours at our best is the desire to lead a life worthy of the calling to which we have been called. And every renewal in Christian history has had this feature. Paul mending nets, Augustine chaste again, Luther and Erasmus cleansing Rome, Wesley and his coal miners and class meetings, the civil rights movement with its various and contending interpretations today, the Latin American-based communities, and every single spiritual nudging in our own church and community. There is an authority that is visible in every person, in every woman or man, who has found the freedom of vocation, the freedom to live with some abandon. Look around at the windows in this charming chapel following worship, and you will see the faces of women and men who found an authentic simplicity, a way to live with a bit of abandon, to take oneself lightly and so to fly like the angels. They learned over time to model a daily, heartfelt affirmation of the shared good, the common good, the communal good. Mark 10:35 is one of the spots in the earliest gospel at which the emerging institutional needs of the church are visible. And Christianity wrestled with institutional formational questions in the first century, as in, for whom is the gospel? As in, what are the definitive texts? As in, and especially, who shall hold authority? What, how, where, who? And that should reassure us too. They struggled to make things go right in shared communal institutional life, and so do we. They resisted triangles, and so do we. They reached for I and thou, not I and it, I and thou relationships, and so do we. And as this passage shows, from the outset, it has been difficult, terribly difficult, for the community of faith, the Christian church, to maintain its own authentic form of authority over against the lesser models abroad in every age. Notice and emphasize in your hearing and in your memory the phrase, servant of all, slave of all, servant of all. How did Paul put it? Knowledge puffs up, love builds up. In a time like ours, the very real fears of pollution, pandemic, politics, prejudice, and pain tend to shove us toward a fearful taste for authoritarianism here and around the globe. The fears of the day and the night can make us afraid of freedom, which is our birthright, and inclined against our better nature, our own best selves, with authoritarianism at all levels, including at the highest ones. Be careful here. A few years ago, my friend Charles Rice spoke of service and of the minister as the servant of the servants of God. He told about an Easter when he was in Greece. There he sat in an Orthodox church and watched the faithful in devotions. And there was a great glass icon of Christ to which, following prayers, women and men would move and then kneel. And then as they rose, they kissed the glass icon and moved on. But every so often, a woman dressed in black would emerge from the shadows with some cleanser or Windex and a cloth and would clean the image, making it clear again. A servant of the servants of God, you might say, washing away the accumulated piety before her. Maybe that is part of what we hope for come Sunday. We hope come Sunday, a gentle washing away of past accumulated piety to make room for what is real and what is authentic and what is not simplistic, but bright and simple. Think this quiet morning of someone you have known who provided heartfelt service to the servants of God, steady, sincere, even suffering service, that is. Think of someone who helped you once when you really needed it, who helped you when you needed help. Beloved, every one of us has some influence, some leadership. If you have a pen, a telephone, a computer, email, a tongue, a household, a family, a job, a community, a church, then you have authority. The question, one that provokes a response and then that allows us to take a step forward, is just this: how will you use, render, apply, shape, and offer the influence you have? How will you use the authority you have? Our gospel today suggests a response. A simple passion for the common good of the servants of God is at the heart of servant leadership. And here is leadership: simple, authentic service. For the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. Faith comes one step at a time. This week, can you take a step in faith towards simple, authentic service, akin to that of the Lord Christ, the servant leader?